Hi, I'm Alan Liebman. This is number 0380, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0380. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, we have another visit from Donnie Most from Happy Days fame as he talks about his singing career and the release of his new CDs.
Something I did before I was acting, I started out singing when I was pretty young, 14, 15 years old, singing up in the Catskill Mountains upstate New York. And I've always loved the great American songbook and the jazz standards. And I'm so happy that I got to do some recording, and I have the a Christmas EP coming out called Donnie Most Swinging Down the Chimney the Night. And then I have my full CD called Demos Mostly Swinging coming out in February, and I'm just so excited about it. It's sort of almost dreamlike.
Herbie J. Pilato and his book on television's leading men, entitled Dashing, Daring, and Debonair.
A couple years ago, I did a book called Glamour, Gidgets, and the Girl Next Door, which profiled the female icons of the 50s, 60s, and 70s. And I knew that I wanted to write about the guys, but I think I wanted to expand it more. Yet, because there were so many more male stars, I had to change the books a little bit. The Glamour book was more trivia-oriented, and this new book about the guys, each chapter is more of a narrative biography without too much trivia.
Stuart Nolman is in with another edition of Book Banter.
Hi, I'm Stuart Nolman, and Book Banter joins with comedy legend Carol Burnett as she looks back at her successful CBS variety series with In Such Good Company. So let's be glad we had this time together very soon on the Stuff File program.
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later. The person who told you this was show number 0380 was Alan Liebman, who is a hospice care registered nurse at the Halifax Health Hospice in Daytona, Florida. You can check out their website at halifaxhealth.org. And thank you very much, Alan. Alan, by the way, who is also a former Montrealer. Thank you very much, Alan, for doing the guest late on this edition of the Stuff File program, a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? A man was arrested on a charge of criminal mischief after allegedly urinating on cases of beer at a 7-Eleven convenience store in Florida. Treasure Island police say they have arrested 46-year-old Daniel Colon, and you know Colon is also spelled colon, right? Yeah. After being accused of ruining at least six cases of beer inside the store's cooler. According to the criminal complaint, Colon entered the 7-Eleven looking for a bathroom. Colon opened a door to the cooler after he couldn't find the toilet. He unzipped his pants and began to pee. Store employee followed Colon into the cooler and confronted him. Colon then left the store. He urinated on six cases of Busch Light, causing $100 in damage. He was later pulled over by police for driving drunk. You know, there might be some who would think the brand of beer he peed on might have been a critical review of some kind. But in all seriousness, he was peeing on either bottles or cans. The story isn't specific as to what it was, either bottle or cans, but I'm assuming that they were sealed. So, did he really ruin the beer? I mean, can't they just be rinsed off? Again, we're talking Busch Light here. Yeah. Anyway, the 911 calls were streaming in. There was a wrong-way driver on the interstate through Maitland, Florida. But by the time Florida Highway Patrol troopers could get there, the car had crashed into a barrier. The driver, 32-year-old Angela Sammons, was in good enough condition that she could get out of the car by herself, but was stumbling and staggering, troopers say, and she put her shoes on the wrong feet. Oh, they were her own feet, just, you know, the left shoe on... Never mind. Sammons was arrested on charges of driving under the influence of alcohol or drugs, and in the subsequent search of her car, troopers found multiple driver's license, loaded guns, and handcuffs. Sammons was an officer for the state's Division of Alcoholic Beverages and Tobacco, but had resigned last year. I guess she quit when she decided she had a lifetime supply. Yes. Family means a lot to 21-year-old Christopher Burns of Orange Park, Florida. So much so that he has a large tattoo on his neck reading family. I've seen a picture of his mugshot, by the way. I'm getting ahead of myself, aren't I? I've seen a picture of his mugshot with the big family tattoo. It looks ridiculous. Anyway, Burns got mighty upset at his 19-year-old sister, though. She washed his pants and didn't check his pockets first. His drug stash was in there. He was so angry that he pulled out a gun from under a couch cushion and pointed it towards her. She told Clay County Sheriff's deputy she feared for her life, but Burns instead went outside and relieved his anger by shooting several shots into the ground, deputies say. Burns was arrested and charged with aggravated assault with a deadly weapon without the intent to kill. Well, of course, he had not intended to kill. I mean, she's family. This brings new meaning to Big Brother is watching you. And you know, I like to look on the bright side of things. I mean, at least his pants were clean. Okay, the event inside Arnelia's Bar in St. Paul, Minnesota may not count as violence, but police say the incident outside the bar certainly does. The inside event was pure adult fun, said promoter Kesha Ray. Women are invited to smack each other's faces in an organized voluntary competition. After the fun, and I'm doing air quotes here, one participant was on her way to her car when she encountered her opponent with six or seven other people. The ambush sent her to the hospital with bruises and scratches, though some of the bruises, she said, were from the competition. What the heck is going on inside bars these days? I mean, has karaoke gone out of vogue? This brings new meaning to talking smack. Somebody's going to bring back dwarf tossing. Wait and see. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, a man called police after he saw 56-year-old Kurt Jenkins driving through his Boynton Beach, Florida neighborhood, a gated community, I may add. According to the caller, Jenkins motioned towards his lap as an apparent invitation to the man. The man opened the passenger door and saw that Jenkins was wearing nothing, except some electrical wires attached to his genitals. The wires were later identified as an eye relief muscle stimulator. Okay. The man declined Jenkins' offer to get into the car, but did snap a cell phone photo he later showed to police. Jenkins allegedly continued his slow drive through the neighborhood, passing some children getting off a school bus. Police responded and pulled Jenkins over. When he got out of his car, he had put on red shorts, but nothing else. He was charged with lewd behavior in front of children, indecent exposure, and resisting arrest. Well, that story is shocking in more ways than one. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program, shall we? Actor, director, singer Don Most, best known for his starring role on Happy Days, has been singing up a storm of late. We talked to him on the program 2 years ago as he was traveling with his group in a show called Donnie Most Sings and Swings. Well, now he's got not one, not two, but three CD releases coming out. To talk about them, Don joins us on the line right now from California. Hi, Don.
Hi. Great to be with you again.
Nice to have you back on the program. So as I said in the introduction, you have been very busy of late. You've got the CDs coming out. Everything seems to be going great.
Yeah, I've been having such a blast with this music. We probably talked about this last time, but something I did before I was acting. I started out singing when I was pretty young, 14, 15 years old, singing up in the Catskill Mountains upstate New York. And I've always loved the great American songbook and the jazz standards, and I'm so happy that I got to do some recording, and I have the Christmas EP coming out. Well, it's out now digitally, but it'll be out December 9th on a CD called Donimo Swinging Down the Chimney Tonight. And then I have my full CD called Demos Mostly Swinging coming out in February. And I'm just so excited about it. It's been sort of almost dreamlike the way things have come together for this.
I've had the pleasure to see some of your work on video with the, you singing in front of the band. And the thing that I find very interesting about it is, though, even though those songs are very, very familiar, and certainly they're familiar as being sung by someone else for whom they had their hits, you bring an energy to it that is all your own, and you make those songs your own.
Oh, that's great to hear. I hope so. You know, I've been influenced by so many of the greats over the years, and I think a lot of times I'll say in my show, I don't know why I waited this long to do this, but I think there was a reason. I think it was a matter of sort of an education, you know, through the years of listening to all the wonderful singers who've done this, and somehow sort of assimilating it and reimagining it. And I guess that took time, and I probably wasn't ready for that 20, 30 years ago. And now is the time where it is sort of my own interpretation of the music that's coming through. So, timing is everything, and there's a reason when things happen, I guess.
Well, you say you weren't ready 20, 30 years ago. It's an interesting point, because when I think of the songs that you're singing, and also, again, when I saw the video, I keep thinking of the Bobby Darins, the Frank Sinatras, mm-hmm. the Dean Martins who sang those songs, and there needed to be, I think, a certain maturity that comes with age to be able to interpret those songs. They're not necessarily, boy band tunes, so to speak.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, for some, I don't know. I was born in the wrong era, because when I was very young, I loved this music that at the time was looked upon as your parents' and grandparents' music, but and not too many other people my age liked it. But I loved it, and it was a little odd for me when I was younger singing some of those songs. I didn't have as you mentioned, the maturity, the life lessons, and hopefully some wisdom that came along with that. And that was one of the things that people remarked when they saw me doing it live, that it was like you now can embody the lyrics and the style of the music in a way that I probably couldn't have when I was younger. So, I wasn't ready for this when I was in my 20s, 30s, even though I loved the music then and I would have liked to have done it. It wouldn't have rang true as it seems to be doing now.
Some of the songs we're talking about, Lady is a Tramp, Mac the Knife, Luck Be a Lady Tonight, It Had to Be You. When you, as we mentioned the last time we spoke, you were touring around with, a seven-piece band that you're working with?
It varies. Sometimes it's seven-piece, sometimes it's 10, 12, and even 17. I'm doing a show out here in California at Catalina's Jazz Club on the 21st of December, and I'll have a full 17-piece band, and there's nothing like that. That's exciting beyond, I can't even explain it. But then I'm going to be doing 54 Below in New York City on December 5th, and I'll have eight pieces. So, it varies depending on the situation. And they're all great, you know, I mean, with great musicians and the arrangements and these songs that are standards for a reason, because they stand the test of time. Whatever the configuration is, I'm having a blast.
You talk about the era of music that you sing because of your background and your success in Happy Days, and the fact that that's a show that continues to be seen around the world. Do you have an opportunity when you do these songs live to draw out a younger audience?
Sometimes there have been there have been some of my shows where there have been younger people there, and I love that because a lot of them haven't been exposed to this music, and there's different ways to expose people to the music. I mean, for me, it was so important to get the right arrangements and the right feel for this music that I think could transcend today's audience and bridge it between people who loved it 30, 40, you know, I mean, who loved the old-time feel, but also bring a 21st century feel to it as well. And I have an incredible musical directors that I work with and arrangers, and I take I spend a lot of time and attention to detail on those arrangements to do it the way that I feel will bring in just about any age group. And that's what my experience has been. When younger people have come to the shows, they're like, oh my God, I love this music, and you know, they feel like they've discovered something new, which is kind of a thrill for me to witness, because obviously it's not new, but their enthusiasm and love of it is so, you know, it's so rewarding for me when I see that.
On another note, I mentioned Happy Days. Sadly, recently, Gary Marshall passed away. I had the opportunity to see you and some of your fellow co-stars pay homage to Gary on a recent episode of The Odd Couple. What was that like for you?
Yes. It was a wonderful time. As you know, Gary created the original Odd Couple for TV, starring Jack Klugman and Tony Randall. And then he was a consultant on this new updated version with Matthew Perry, Thomas Lennon. And he played Oscar's dad, Matthew Perry's dad, in an episode. And they were planning to do some more. And then when Gary passed away, they decided to write an episode about Oscar's father passing away, and then bringing back characters that his father had known and worked with over the years. And they took that occasion to bring in people that Gary Marshall had actually worked with. So it was a wonderful opportunity to pay homage to Gary, the people that, you know, owe a lot to gratitude for what he did for their careers. So on that particular episode, Ron Howard appeared, and Cindy Williams and Penny Marshall, Anson Williams and myself, and Marion Ross from Happy Days, and Pam Dauber from Mork and Mindy. And the cast, they were so gracious and appreciative and welcoming to us. And the whole thing had a very special, magical feeling to it. And I think, you know, it was all because of Gary. So it was a great, great time.
And I think Gary would have been proud.
I think so. Yeah. I really do. Yes.
Getting back to your work, again, one of the CDs you have is a Christmas CD entitled Swinging Down the Chimney Tonight. I would assume you're going to be performing a lot of these songs live as well. I know you're going to be, if I'm not mistaken, in New Jersey on December the 3rd. Is that correct?
Yes. I forgot to mention that. On December 3rd, it's the 4th. It's a Sunday, the 4th, where there's a benefit in the Count Basie Theater in Red Bank, New Jersey, which benefits a youth music program. And the Red Bank Jazz Orchestra is going to be backing. It's a Sinatra bash, you know, around his birthday. And Dina Martin, the daughter of Dean Martin, I'm very excited about working with her. She's going to be a guest star, as I will, doing some Sinatra songs, and we're going to do something together as well. So I'm really looking forward to meeting her and performing with her in this incredible band. It should be a wonderful experience. And then the following day, night in New York, I'm at 54 Below. So it's a great beginning to the Christmas season for me.
People can find out more information as to where they can get the CDs and also what shows you're performing live by going to your website, donmost.net, correct?
Actually, it's been updated. It's now easier. It would be DonnieMost.com.
DonnieMost.com, okay.
Yes.
DonnieMost.com. Excellent.
There you go.
It sounds like you're having the time of your life doing this, and it must be a blast for you as well as it is for the audience.
Yeah, the audience, the reaction has been fantastic, and that was so, you know, when I first started doing this, I said, let me try this. Like I said, it's going back to what I did first, and let me, if I'm having a good time and people seem to be enjoying it, you know, I'll continue and see where it goes. And it's just, it's exceeded my expectations. It's gone way beyond. You know, the reaction has been incredible, both by the audience and the press, and the CDs. I can't wait for people to hear them. And yes, I am having the time of my life because it's almost like a dream come true that I'm getting to do this now. And it's, you know, like riding a bike since I did it when I was so young, and it just comes back to me. But I also have been working really hard at it and having, you know, you could do stuff that you couldn't do back when I was younger. You could work at home on your computer with all these software recording programs and practice and hear it and perfect it. And being a perfectionist is kind of like the perfect storm for me for all this to come together.
Well, as to paraphrase you in the video on that I saw with you singing, you still got it. I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us. Continued success and best of the holiday season to you.
Oh, thank you so much. And thanks for having me on again. And I hope people will check out the music because I love sharing it with people.
Actor, director, singer Donnie Most. You can check out his website at DonnieMost.com to find dates for his upcoming tour and also to purchase his CDs. You can also go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0380, to find the link. And before we get to the break, here's a little taste of Donnie singing C'est Si Bon in a duet with Becky Martin.
C'est si bon. Lovers say that in France, when they thrill to romance, it means that it's so good.
Ah, c'est si bon. So I say it to you, like the French people do, because it's so, so good.
Every word, every sigh, every kiss, dear, leads to only one thought, and it's this, dear.
Yes, dear. Oh, it's so good. Nothing else can replace
just your slightest embrace. And if you only would be my own for the rest of my days, I would whisper this phrase.
Say, say, si bon.
Oh, baby, si bon. Ma chérie, si bon. Si bon. I have only one thought, and it's this, dear.
Oh, it's so good.
Nothing else can replace
just your slightest embrace.
And if you only for this phrase,
say, si bon.
Oh, chérie, si bon.
Yes, dear.
Oh, chérie, si bon. And Marie, si bon.
Chichi, si bon.
All the girls, it's si bon.
Si bon.
I love you all. bon.
Yes, c'est bon.
I'm saying Tracy.
Ah, c'est bon.
One more time, c'est bon.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of the Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands, just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
Actors, authors, quirky guests, and the comic book. It all comes to you here on the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to the author of Dashing, Daring, and Debonair, TV's top male icons from the 50s, 60s, and 70s. Plus, Stuart Nelman will be along with another edition of Book Banter. We do indeed have an Idiot of the Day coming your way, and lots more Stuff File news right here, right now, on a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, brothers Keith and Christopher Dart were arrested for allegedly stealing at least 13 vehicles worth over $250,000. Court records show the brothers said they never profited from the thefts and even took investigators to show them where they'd left the stolen vehicles. The criminal complainant says Keith, who was 44, even explained his motive: impressing his 16-year-old son. Wow. According to the complainant, Keith told investigators his son was addicted to methamphetamine and tried to emulate people who live the thug life. Keith says Christopher, who was 32, would drive him in and around Green Bay, Wisconsin, until they found a good target, and then he would pick him up after he dumped the car. Keith hoped his son would see him as a criminal and thus cool, so that he would start talking to him again. The Darts face multiple felony charges and, if convicted, could spend more than 60 years in prison. Wow. Success. Mission accomplished. Oh, his parenting skills suck, but he did succeed in doing what he wanted to do. And now he and his son can talk often through plexiglass and a wall phone. You know, this guy came dangerously close to being the idiot of the day, because this is one of the most idiotic things I've ever heard. But he's not the idiot of the day. That comes later. Stick around for that. A former county employee in Arkansas has been arrested after prosecutors accused him of using a county credit card to buy personal items, including Arkansas Razorbacks tickets and a tuxedo for her dog. The Sentinel Record newspaper reports that Christy Goss was arrested on 6 counts of fraudulent use of a credit card. Goss had worked as administrative assistant for the Garland County Judge's Office. According to an affidavit, investigators and auditors flagged about $200,000 in purchases made on the county's credit card, including a diamond bracelet, Razorbacks tickets, pet insurance, and the dog tuxedo. which was ordered from Amazon. You know, I often said when you go out and buy things like a dog tuxedo, that shows that you have more dollars than cents. But in this case, Christy didn't even have the dollars. So there you go. And no sense at all. No sense at all. Anyway. Fayette County, West Virginia sheriff's deputies were dispatched to a home in Oak Hill to investigate a minor complaint. When they arrived, they saw a sign taped to the door that read, "Due to snitches, everyone entering my home is subjected to being searched. All cell phones and drinks will be left outside. If you're not a snitch, it won't offend you if I search you." After investigating the complaint, deputies got permission to search the home. The search turned up heroin, methamphetamine, and various other unknown substances that were believed to be narcotics, according to a deputy spokeswoman. 28-year-old April Lavender, sounds like a stripper name, doesn't it? She was charged with possession of a controlled substance with the intent to deliver, and 22-year-old Christy Weiss was charged with joyriding, which, by the way, was the initial minor complaint. So, it's like a sheriff special. Investigate one crime, get another crime free. Yeah. And police are looking to arrest a man on a charge of assault after allegedly stabbing Cookie Monster, who was trying to stop a fight. The New York Police Department said the incident unfolded in Times Square, where people dress as characters to collect tips from tourists in exchange for photos. 24-year-old Christopher Ramos told police that he dressed as Cookie Monster in order to collect tips from tourists. At some point, a fight broke out between a 30-year-old man who was dressed as a fighter pilot and a man who was dressed as an American Indian. Ramos stepped in to try to stop the fight, but the 30-year-old man pulled out a knife and stabbed Cookie Monster in the back. So far, no arrests have been made. But I'm assuming a lot of childhood fantasies were crushed for some kids. And in a similar vein, at press time, Bugs Bunny and Pink Panther were on trial in St. Catharines, Ontario, on aggravated assault charges from a Halloween 2015 bar fight in which Dracula's ear was severely slashed with a broken bottle. "There was a lot of blood," said a witness, "but coming from Dracula, not being sucked out by Dracula. We have since learned that the judge cleared Bugs, but is still deliberating on Panther." You know, personally, I'm concerned about the growing cartoon-on-cartoon crime. On the plus side, it can only add to the economic balance sheet of the Acme Company. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, shall we? Herbie J. Pilato is the author of a book that looks at the male television stars of an era gone by. It's entitled Dashing, Daring, and Debonair, TV's Top Male Icons from the 50s, 60s, and 70s. Herbie joins us on the line right now from California. Hi, Herbie.
Hello, Peter. Thank you for having me on the show. Excited.
Thanks for being on the program. You're right in my wheelhouse. I mean, I grew up watching the people that you've talked about, and I'm big fans of them. I know you've written several books. What made you decide to do this particular one now?
Well, I did a couple years ago. I did a book called Glamour, Gidgets, and the Girl Next Door, which profiled the female icons. The younger female icons, actually, of the 50s, 60s, and 70s. And I knew that I wanted to write about the guys, but I think I wanted to expand it more. And yet, because there were so many more male stars, I had to change the books a little bit. The Glamour book was more trivia-oriented, and this new book about the guys is more each chapter is more of a narrative biography without too much trivia.
Now, you seem to have had a charmed life yourself. I mean, you started off in a job I would have killed to have had. You started off as an NBC page back in the 80s?
Oh, best job ever. I'm telling you.
I can imagine.
I loved that job. If I could have stayed there forever as a page, I would have. Yes, it was a wonderful job in Burbank, working the Tonight Show, starring Johnny Carson almost every night in the 80s. It was great.
So what was it about that era for you, besides the fact that you also lived it, but what is it about that era of stars that makes you want to write these books in the first place?
Well, I mean, there's an awful lot of talent out there today in contemporary shows and in movies, for that matter. But there's something about the storytelling of the older shows, something about the quality of the actual stories and the presentation. There's an energy and an optimism that you just don't see in general today. A lot of the newer shows, everybody's sarcastic, everybody rolls their eyes. You know, everybody looks the same. On Gilligan's Island, you know, everybody looked different. And they celebrated those differences. So it's just, it's near and dear to my heart, and I think it's near and dear to many people's hearts, just certainly by the arising of the new of the networks like Decades TV and MeTV, Cozy, Antenna TV. Everybody is going gaga for the classic shows.
When you look at those stars, and in this case we're talking about the top male icons of the 50s, 60s, and 70s, was there a commonality amongst them that that stands out as far as you're concerned if you're looking back at all of them collectively?
Well, you know, that's an awesome question, and I would have to say that that was the great thing about all of those stars, is that they each had their own particular charisma or appeal, that not all of them were perfect looking or gorgeous like they are today with perfect hair. You know, you had icons of every make and ilk, if that's the right term.
Isn't part of the what you've just described, isn't part of the reason for that the fact that, to be honest, a lot of those stars had more of an acting background leading up to their stardom, either with theater or working in New York or some of the routes that people used to take to get to Hollywood as opposed to the fast track that some take now?
I agree 100%, absolutely. You know, today you walk on the beach and they put it on YouTube and then all of a sudden you get a series. You know, wherein back in the day, you studied film in high school or college, and then you did a few off Broadway shows, and then you got on Broadway, and you studied it. Today, it's just not the case. And in the process of studying back in the day, you also gained character in your life. You struggled or you aspired, and you struggled with other actors who were struggling. Not that actors today don't struggle, or new actors, but it's a lot easier to become a successful actor today than it was then. And I think in the process of making it easier, you lose something about life, because a good actor brings the lessons of life to whatever role they're portraying.
One of the things about television stars, particularly the male television stars in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, is there was a stoicism about the characters they played. There's an upside to that, maybe a downside to that. I think of two characters, Robert Wagner in It Takes a Thief and Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. in the FBI. These are guys who are probably fun-loving people, but in their roles, they never got a chance to smile.
I would say, yeah, that's true. Those are the two standouts. And I'm actually watching the FBI DVDs in these last couple weeks. I mean, Ephraim was really incredible, so charismatic and so very handsome. But you're right, he wasn't allowed to branch out. In the first few episodes of the series, however, in the first season, he was given a daughter, and some of the characters were given lives beyond their job. But as the show progressed through that first season and into the second season, that storyline, all of those storylines were dropped, and it just became about their jobs. So it's interesting that you bring that point up.
You're currently watching the FBI, as you mentioned, on DVD. I'm just wondering, in putting all this stuff together, if you yourself have a favorite actor, favorite show from that time period that stands out for you head and shoulders over the others?
Well, I'm the author of the Bionic book, so the $6 Million Man, Lee Majors, as Steve Austin, he's one of my favorites, but gosh, it's so hard to pinpoint one. William Shatner, Captain Kirk, Robert Conrad as James T. West on Wild Wild West. I mean, they were great, and I think I I gravitated toward the little guys, because I'm a little guy, and I'm like, well, if those little guys can do it, I can do it too. So it was pretty cool.
In obviously, you have a background in this. You've written several books, but are there little nuggets of information that even you sometimes are surprised by when you come across it when you're doing research for your books?
Absolutely. Yeah. Like Michael Cole, who played on the Mod Squad, he was profiled, or he is profiled, in my dashing book, along with Clarence Williams III, his co-star on the Mod Squad. And I learned that he lived a very, very similar life to his role as Pete Cochran on the Mod Squad, how he struggled and really brought a lot of his own personal struggles to that role. So things like that are amazing to hear. And there's always something to learn. I mean, no matter how many interviews you do with the same people over and over again, the next time you interview them, you learn something new, because actors are such really interesting people who lead such interesting lives.
You mentioned the two lead actors of the Mod Squad, two other gentlemen in the 70s who never got a chance to smile.
Yeah, definitely not Link, for sure.
Oh, man.
Clarence Williams,
yeah.
Absolutely not. In the first couple of years, maybe, but later on, those characters became even more stoic. And yet, not only did they not smile a lot, there wasn't a lot of dialogue. The acting really was so good that you could really feel what each character was feeling for each other based on just a silent glance. And actually, Michael Cole talks about that in my book.
Mm. How many actors are profiled in Dashing, Daring, and Debonair?
Over 75, I believe, which is an increase over the women from the Gidgets book. And that's basically because I took out, like I said, a lot of the trivia and focused on putting less trivia and more profiles in there.
With all the connections and all the work you've done over the years, was it a difficult process to pare it down to those 70s? I mean, you've met so many, worked with so many. Was that a tough choice to make?
Absolutely. I mean, I had to leave some out, you know, which was a little disturbing for me. But I couldn't do a 1,000-page book. If I could, I'd include everybody. But there were a lot of people I left out.
Mm. It's a great idea for a book. As I mentioned, it's a book that's right in my wheelhouse of interest. It's called Dashing, Daring, and Debonair, TV's Top Male Icons from the 50s, 60s, and 70s. People can also find out more information by going to your website, which is herbiejpilato.com, correct?
Yes, they can order actually personally signed books directly from the shop page at herbiejpilato.com.
Herbie, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Thank you so much for having me, Peter.
Herbie J. Pilato, author of Dashing, Daring, and Debonair, TV's Top Male Icons from the 50s, 60s, and 70s. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0380, and you'll find links to Herbie's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. In basketball, a player who commits too many fouls is ejected from the game. In our court system, a person who files too many frivolous lawsuits can be ejected from the courts, too. There's a legal term for a person who files too many frivolous lawsuits. They're called a vexatious litigant. Courts don't do this often, but a woman in Idaho filed so many frivolous lawsuits she was officially named a vexatious litigant by 3 states, 2 federal circuit courts, and the U.S. Supreme Court. The courts told the repeat lawsuit offender that she couldn't file any more lawsuits without special permission from a judge. So what did she do next? She actually sued the last judge who told her she couldn't file any more lawsuits. Let's be fair, taking away anyone's right to sue should be done only as a last resort. Yet because frivolous lawsuits tie up courts and delay justice for others, judges shouldn't hesitate to penalize people when they continuously abuse the courts. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamericatv.org.
Hi, this is Wynonna Judd, and you probably don't think of me as a person with an eating disorder, but here's my truth. Eating disorders are real, and they are not just about losing weight. Eating disorders are the way you feel about your body and the way you treat yourself. For years, I have been a compulsive overeater, and it wasn't until its effects threatened my health, my family, and my career that I finally reached out for help. Recovering from an eating disorder is possible, and I'm living proof. But you have to take the first step, so I urge you to visit nationaleatingdisorders.org.
From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's time to crack a spine. The Stuff File presents Book Banter with Stuart Nauman. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And here he is, a fellow whom we always have a good time together, Stuart Nauman. Hi, Stu.
Hi, Peter. Will you sign my guest book, please?
I know you're wearing headsets, so please do not tug on your ear.
I tried that. Too late.
Okay.
I broke a finger, okay?
Gee, what could we be talking about?
Well, it's... If you don't have a clue yet, it's the Carol Burnett Show, because I think it was the last of the great TV variety series from 1967 to 1978. The Carol Burnett Show was a staple of CBS's primetime lineup, as it entertained viewers with original comedy sketches, impressive Broadway-quality musical and dance numbers, and mini-musicals, too, memorable characters, movie and TV parodies, top-notch special celebrity guests, and a lineup of regular cast members who ended up being just as popular as the show's namesake. Carol Burnett herself is now 83. She admits that she had so much fun doing the show, which she affectionately referred to as the Sandbox. And thanks to a recently released DVD box set of some of the lost episodes of the show that were done between 67 and 72 and a PBS special, future generations can appreciate why the Carol Burnett Show ranks up there as one of TV's greatest variety series. And that appreciation is extended even further with the release of Burnett's fourth book called In Such Good Company. Now, the book is basically a collection of Burnett's own anecdotes and reminiscences that deal with 11 years worth of personal and professional highlights of putting together this show. The impression you get after reading this book is that Burnett enjoyed each and every moment of these 11 years and has a special degree of respect, admiration, and affection for every person who worked alongside her, many of whom were with the show for its entire run. And Burnett recalls with great detail what made the Carol Burnett Show so special in the truest behind-the-scenes fashion. We find out why she had Jim Nabors of then Gomer Pyle fame as the show's guest star for every season premiere throughout the show's run, how Bob Mackie came up with the famous curtain rod dress that Burnett wore during their famous Gone with the Wind parody, which got the show's biggest and loudest laugh from the audience, and it's also now encased in the Smithsonian. Also having the golden opportunity to perform alongside a wealth of high-caliber celebrity guests, many of whom were her movie idols like Rita Hayworth, Lucille Ball, Betty Grable, Bing Crosby, Vincent Price, and Jimmy Stewart. And, of course, the origins of some of the show's most popular characters and sketches, from The Family to As the Stomach Turns to Stella Toddler to The Charwoman to the always hilarious Mr. Tudball and Miss Wiggins.
You know, now, you talk about some of the celebrity... guest stars she had and some of old Hollywood. I remember two in particular that just seemed to have as much fun playing in her sandbox as she had with them. Lana Turner and also Gloria Swanson.
Yes. And those are written about in the book, actually, her encounters with these two legends. And in fact, Gloria Swanson, asked to be on the show after she saw her parody of Sunset Boulevard, which was given a more 1970s spin on it, and she liked it so much she wanted to be on the show.
Another classic bit from Carol Burnett, absolutely.
Oh, exactly. But this book shows that Carol Burnett helmed the program with a great deal of care and affection and developed a family-like atmosphere that helped bring the best out of every person who was involved with the show. And the end result paid off tremendously when the show aired every week, especially Saturday nights, and sadly earned its reputation as an enduring piece of classic television. You know, that just no wonder we were so glad to have this time together with Carol Burnett and company for 11 memorable years.
Great show indeed.
Yeah.
The book is?
It's called In Such Good Company by Carol Burnett. It's published by Crown Archetype, and it's $37.
And in that vein, what else do you recommend this time around, sir?
Well, a couple other books by Carol Burnett. There's one, her... first memoir, which was published about 30 years ago, called One More Time, which deals with her early years up until the time she joined the cast of The Gary Moore Show in the early 60s. And the companion book, which was published about 5-6 years ago, called This Time Together, which focuses on her show business career. So then you add this with In Such Good Company, and you got the complete Carol Burnett literary trilogy.
Excellent. And again, this week's book is?
In Such Good Company by the one and only Carol Burnett, published by Crown Archetype, and it's $37.
And how can we find you, sir?
Well, certainly not in the offices of Mr. Tudball. I'm in the Montreal Times every week, in print, every Saturday, or online at www.mtltimes.ca.
Thank you very much, sir.
And thank you, Peter. And I'm trying to tug my earlobe, but I'm still not successful.
Okay.
Those earphones.
Stuart Nelman with another edition of Book Banter here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File.
And we're just about a racetrack for this edition of the Stuff File program. We do have an idiot of the day coming your way in just a matter of moments, but I do want to take a brief moment here to say a word about Elita Hair Care Products of Beverly Hills. You know, many hair care products contain harmful ingredients that can damage your hair and scalp. Well, at Elita Hair, their policy is to use only great natural ingredients without harmful chemicals. All Elita Hair products are made in the U.S. and are not tested, I repeat, not tested on animals. They're safe, healthy, natural, and luxurious, but not at the usually high salon prices. Now, listeners to the Stuff File program, you have a special offer. Visit Elita Hair at their website. That's elitahair.com, and Elita Hair is spelled E-L-I-T-A-H-A-I-R. EliteHair.com. When you purchase Elita Hair products, use the promo code STUFFED10. That's STUFFED10, STUPH10. That will get you a 10% discount, and that's the promo code STUFFED10. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for the show, which is show number 0380, and you'll find the promo code and the link near the bottom of the page. Also want to mention very quickly a couple of new things coming your way. A new book is coming out, a new book by me, Peter Anthony Holder. The book is called Great Conversations, My Interviews with Two Men on the Moon and a Galaxy of Stars. It's published by Bear Manor Media. It will be published by Bear Manor Media. It comes out in the new year. More on that when we get closer to the release date. That should be some fun. And there's a new website coming, a new website for the Stuff File program. That'll be unveiled in the new year. More news on that a little later on as well. But what you've all been waiting for, boys and girls, the moment of truth. Here it is, right here, right now. Yes, it's time once again for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
Walmart often seems to be a hotbed of stupidity, and it really doesn't matter which country you're talking about. This time around, it's here in Canada. A man has been jailed, and he received a large fine for calling in a bomb threat to a Walmart store. 19-year-old Logan Richard Arsenault of Charlottetown wanted to be a good boyfriend and give his girlfriend a break from work, so he called in a bomb threat. The teenager went to a payphone in Stratford and called in the bomb threat. His plan worked as all the shoppers and employees at Walmart were evacuated. The store remained closed for 6 hours as the RCMP explosives unit and firefighters searched the store. As a result of the closure, Walmart suffered losses of business in the amount of approximately $100,000. Arsenault was arrested and he pleaded guilty to calling in the bomb threat. Chief Judge Nancy Orr in the provincial court ordered him to pay Walmart $89,100 in restitution, and something tells me he's not going to be able to afford that. Now, why, oh why, would you think that calling in a bomb threat to your girlfriend's place of employment is the best way to get her some time off? One reason, and one reason only, you're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0380. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links and all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0380. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check out the Stuff File store where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise. from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR Revolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes, streaming on Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Today's broadcast could be heard directly in your home, car, or wireless device, or on your computer, so you can listen on an outpatient basis. For those of you hearing this show directly inside your head, please adjust your medication.